Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Voices Carry for Animals, number 372 shows and counting. And we're going to keep going for all the animals in need and distress. There are animal friends, and they deserve to have their rights granted, not ignored, and live in comfort and peace and free from anxiety and fear. And I mean, the list goes on. And they deserve, all of them deserve better lives and futures. And that's what our job is to make sure it happens and that they do live in comfortable and that they, you know, they're so awesome. Animals are so awesome. They, you know, we all share this earth together temporarily, and we got to make the best of it. So whatever you can do out there to help them out, be their voice. Because animals are like children and the elderly. They're voiceless, innocent, defenseless, and helpless. So we have to stand up for them and do what's right. And, you know, better lives for them because, you know, they're out there with us. You know, we don't get to see the animals, all the animals out there every day. But the ones that we do, you know, hey, the ones at home, we have, you know, want them to have great lives at home and just like the rest of them. Or if they're out in the wild, they deserve to be treated fairly, you know, or the farm animals. And this radio platform stands up for all of our animal friends in need. And so many great shows. A big thank you to all the former guests out there, the former callers, for making this show a total success, and all the listeners giving you a big shout-out, too, for all your support. And, you know, keep spreading the word out there about these shows because, you know, it does matter. And I've seen so many victories come through, and even if no, I was not involved, it did happen, did the victory dance. And it makes you feel good, and you don't stop there. But my name is Debbie Dahmer, also known as Mama Bear, and I am the producer and host for Animal Advocates Radio, Voices Carry for Animals, coming to you live every Thursday evening, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Mountain, 4 o'clock Pacific. And later on, I will be taking calls if you would like to ask the guests any comments or questions. And that number is the same every Thursday. It's area code 310-982-4270. If you would like to put that in your contacts. And if you want to speak, press 1. You'll be in the queue. And I'll just try to refrain from any noises in the background, any conversations, radio, TV, and you're more than welcome to come on board. But that's the same number every week. All shows are recorded live and archived on Blog Talk Radio. So you can go back and listen to them 365 days a year, 7 days a week. So, you know, and you can also spread the word about them, share them. How you can follow my podcast is www.blogtalkradio.com / Voices Carry for Animals. And also, this show is coming live from the PPJ Gazette Online. And giving a big shout-out to Marty Oakley. She is on the TS Radio Network. She's the producer and host on there. And that's where Animal Advocates Radio Voices Carry for Animals started from. First show up to 163 shows. So big, huge thank you to her because she taught me everything I know. And just give her your support because she has some hot topic shows on TS Radio Network. And, you know, with the elderly and everything. So, you know, check out the PPJ Gazette Online. You can press follow in the right-hand column. And every time there is a news article or my podcast or Marty's podcast, it will alert you in your primary email. And also, you can search these shows on the PPJ Gazette. Just go to the right-hand column, search, and put in Voices Carry for Animals. Or you can go to the main Blog Talk Radio, and each on-demand episodes is ready to, you know, whichever you want to hear, press it, and then wait to download, and it will play. So please spread the word, everyone, because that's what, you know, how we get the word out, the awareness, the education, and what's going on behind closed doors and behind the scenes. And we just want better lives and futures for them and go for the laws. But I want to bring my guest on. It's his first time, and want to welcome him on board. And it's going to be another great show, everyone. And please keep spreading the word. And before I go, I want to give a big shout-out to Gary Bowden. He's a radio producer of All About Animals Radio. He is a great team player, of course, the super team. But he is Animal Advocate Alliance on Facebook and Twitter. If you could go by their page to see how you can help out, check it out, spread the word, share it, or also All About Animals Radio. He has two great hosts that used to be or former guests on this show, Nicole Rogers. A big shout-out to her. She is Wild for Change, and she also has her other podcast on, I believe it's Apple, and also her Anita Duan on Youth for Animals, and she has her podcast on, or being a host on Animal Advocates Radio. So check it out. You know, we're all a team here, and that's what it takes to get the victories coming in and doing the happy dance. But I want to bring Jack up on board. Jack, Geshet, how do you pronounce that? Geshet?
Oh, Jack is fine, but if you insist, it's Geshet.
Geshet. Okay, I got it. Thank you so
much.
Yeah,
just think Gesundheit, since they told me in third grade or second grade.
Oh, yeah?
That gets you in the right department. Yep. It's a crazy
all
German
right.
word. Yeah.
And
it means smart, actually, which is funny because Jack in German means not.
Wow.
That's a joke.
Check that out. I never knew that. That's all I was going to say. You sound
but you're
like
very polite, Mama Bear. Thank
man.
You for being kind on that.
I got your back, okay?
Yeah,
but,
I believe you.
But you're the founder of the Tree Spirit Project and a Totally Elk Consultant for In Defense of Animals. That's wonderful.
Correct.
Yes, and
yes.
All you're doing for the Tule Elks and everything. It's so sad what's happening to them. And but I want to get you started. You want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you got started on the Tree Spirit Project. Go right ahead. And,
sure. So, I've been a lifelong animal lover, like I'm sure many of the listeners of your show are. Also a lifelong tree and nature lover, so I was always happiest, although I was raised, oddly enough, in New York City with a father who loved the city. My mother was a nature person. She was raised in Brooklyn, born 1925 and since deceased, of course, but she loved being out in nature and in the garden, so she pushed to get us kids out to the country of upstate New York. So I was still of the generation, I was born 1960, where me and my older brother were allowed off-leash out into nature. And that means you can, you know, crawl into streams and run around fields and climb trees and build tree houses and just you know, that kind of life is quickly diminishing because of what we're doing to the world and how we treat animals and what we're doing with wild animals. So that's been lifelong. And then I was in my 40s, a professional photographer. And it's a long story, but I had a change in my life, and I just was more opened up to feeling all that I felt as a little kid, which, you know, is often taught out of us, especially in New York as a guy. You know, toughen up, don't show love and don't show vulnerability, God forbid. And all that kind of fell away in my early 40s. I really had a change of life. I was then living in California, and I started making photographs of trees and groups of people among trees. And that became my advocacy for, hey, folks, let's not cut down the world's forests, and the Tree Spirit Project, which is treespiritproject.com. Just to summarize, and then how I became to work for In Defense of Animals as a consultant on this issue is I became involved with a local national park, which I'll tell more about, called Point Reyes National Seashore. It's famous for having a lighthouse and, 80 miles of protected coastline in California, 80 to 90 miles worth, a beautiful, diverse place. But private cattle industry has taken over a third of it, or more likely refused to go. And as a result, the wild Thule elk, which were brought back in the 1980s, have since been fenced in and are suffering because they need to be free of fences and able to find more food and water. The cattle industry wants them to retain the fences and keep them confined to that land. So I started to be an advocate for that issue, which ties in with other environmental and animal rights issues. And then I met In Defense of Animals, and they asked me to do some work with them. So they've been a wonderful source of support. As you guys know, probably all the listeners, I've been aware of IDA, as In Defense of Animals is called, but they've really been a great support for my work. And we've had a wonderful collaboration together, which is to be a voice for the Thule elk at Point Reyes Seashore, but for all wild animals at Point Reyes Seashore, and all wild animals in all national parks, and all wild animals in America, which are often getting a very bad deal for reasons I suspect we'll get into.
Oh, yeah. And it's sad and heartbreaking what's going on. You know,
yep.
they all deserve better. Not treat one better than the other. Hey, treat
yep.
them all right. They have a right
yeah.
to live on this earth and share like we do. And live comfortably, you know, and that's the sad part. What's going on out there? It's terrible, you know. You see some of them getting treated real good, and then you see one that unfairly getting treated, and they shouldn't have to go through that, you know, experience. And thank you so much for what you're doing, because it means so much. You're a positive impact. You know, you say, hey, enough is enough. We got to do something here. And get these animal rights granted, not ignored, put on the back burner, you know. So, but thank you for
yeah.
everything you're doing there, Jack, because it's
well,
very
you're welcome.
Meaningful.
And just hearing your intro, which was, you know, it's a lot of words, and I realize you are an indefatigable voice for the animals. I mean, I got that from just listening to 5 minutes of your intro to this show. And I'm told, you told me before the show started, this is episode number 372. So, my God, hats off to you for being such a long-time voice for the animals.
Oh, yeah, thank you so much for your meaningful and kind words. And I'm going to keep it up, too, there, Jack, because it started on June of 2014, Voices Carry for Animals. So, you know, and all the amazing guests and the callers and just the audience listening in. You know, it takes teamwork to see any victories. And when we all work together, you know, the stronger we become, and it's strength in numbers. As Mama Cat, a former guest, always tells me that. It's so true, you know, that
Absolutely.
We become stronger, power in numbers. You know, so
Absolutely.
We have to work
Absolutely.
Together and make those positive changes. Because that's
yeah,
what
Yeah, and
it
I'm an advocate for absolutely that. The word I use is community, you know, building community, where it can be very, you know, lots of news in lots of areas, whether it's politics or environment or animal rights, can be very upsetting. And we often feel alone. I often feel alone in it. But the more I do work and meet other people who share my views and care more about the animals than our culture does, I guess, overall, or society does, then I feel that there's hope. You know, that we can make progress. We can make progress. We build community and spread the message, which is one just about opening our hearts and caring for for animals, whether they're wild or domesticated animals, again, to a greater extent.
That's so true. Yes.
Yeah.
More unity in the community, you know, come together, everyone, because we're the only hope for these animals in need and distress. You know, they need us. They cannot, you know, call the police. They can't call upon this radio platform. It's up to us to help give them the changes made. And we can do it. I've seen it happen so many times, and it's so impressive. And, you know, being a positive impact in the world, that's a lot of meaning, too, and it's heartfelt. And stay strong, proactive, optimistic, because you can do it, you know, and get your voices out there, because every effort counts. And
One thing you said that I want to pick up on is you mentioned June 2014. It was in the fall of 2014 that I saw a documentary film called Cowspiracy. I don't know if you're familiar with that or your listeners are, but that's the one that I saw, and it just I guess it was the tipping point or the straw that I don't want to break a camel's back that loaded up the camel's back, so I had to say, oh my gosh, this is something I didn't know, and I need to change my behavior. I was formerly a forest advocate, for which I still am, which is to say, you know, we need the trees in this earth to make the oxygen we breathe, among other functions. But I didn't make the connection between the number one reason human beings as a collective cut down trees on the earth. I didn't know that. I thought it was for development or for fuel, you know, in developing nations. No. I mean, those things are true, too. But it's actually to raise cattle for human consumption, or to raise the GMO crops, soy and corn mostly, to feed the cattle. So those two are linked, and that's what the movie Cowspiracy went into in great detail. I've seen other films and read more books since, but that was the tipping point way back in 2014, and then I was with a vegan girlfriend at the time who challenged me to kind of walk my talk, and why is it, Jack, you treat a dog, which you love, so differently from a cow, which you say you also love, standing in a pasture out here in Northern California where I live. So that maybe had to look at my habits and customs that, you know, we're all born into society. It's no shame, no blame. I'm inspired by one guy named Will Tuttle, who's a beautiful voice for the animals, 35-year vegan advocate, way before veganism existed as a thing. And no shame, no blame, but just having people realize the reality of where our food comes from these days, with 340 million Americans and whatever, 7 billion people on Earth, we can't live as we once did, you know, where we're all just sort of running around hunting and pulling animals out of the wild, because so much of the wild doesn't exist anymore.
Right, and what the healthy choice is, and, you know, we never, you know, quit learning, and when you open your mind to it, and, you know, you open your eyes and your ears, you keep learning things about what's going on out there. And when you have to be open to say, hey, this is healthier for me, or, you know, it's better for me, I'm going to feel better, I'm going to look better, and everything. And it helps save animals' lives, you know, just like fur. You know, I've seen some videos, Jack, that made me sick. When they fur, you know, they skin them alive and stuff like that, and it's so sad. And that animal don't stand a chance, okay? And I've never had fur, I don't want fur, and I never, you know, I don't want to see it. It is so, you know, it's sickening. And, you know, when winter comes and some people go crazy, I want to get a fur coat, and for what? You know, that animal, there's several animals that suffered for that coat that you're wearing, you know, so we got to think about the animals and how they feel, because they don't have a voice. We do, so we have to use it, and we have to use it wisely and be strong about it, because the animals need our attention. They need to live freely and, you know, free from cruelty and you know, neglect, abuse. I mean, there's so much out there. By doing these shows, I've learned so much stuff that I didn't know was going on. You know, so we have to open our eyes and be their voices and be strong voices and come together as a team. You know,
and in addition, because I'm an activist by temperament and by practice at this point, meaning I stir the pot and say things you're not supposed to say, like my father before me, the other thing I do is say, you know, I mean, we can definitely speak up and talk to other people, and we should, but a lot of it's also just our behavior in our society, you know, as consumers, which is what, you know, we very much are in America today. What we eat, what we wear, you were talking about fur coats, choosing not to buy a fur coat or a very good faux fur coat if you like the look of it. Some obviously animal activists don't do that because people won't know that it's faux fur. But anyway, our choices are hugely important. And every single day, I'm also a non-climate denier, which is to say I think our carbon and methane emissions into the atmosphere are heating the planet, because, you know, I believe the federal government, which is showing this as well as most other scientific organizations, show that our emissions matter, to put it gently. And a lot of those emissions come from the cattle industry. So it comes back to the coincidence of three different reasons, really, to be aware of the effect of eating animals has, and just in our personal lives, milk and dairy especially, which is to say the environment, our health, and also obviously the cruelty, which you fully know and talk about all the time. All those three things come mm-hmm. together, and just change your diet and eat like your grandmother said, eat your vegetables. It's kind of that simple. Grandma knew, and she wasn't eating GMO products anyway. They didn't exist then. Yeah.
Yep, that's right. Eat your veggies and your fruits and everything, and you'll be a lot more happier and content. You know, you don't have to worry. You know, it's just the better way, and I've never heard anybody stand up against it, because you can't. That's the healthy way.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. My brother was a vegetarian. He turned vegetarian, didn't want to eat animals, 35 years ago, way ahead of me. And he would come home for Thanksgiving. I was still living in New York State at the time. And he'd be like, Andy, you're not even going to eat turkey? And I just wince. I wince. Because, you know, now I don't want to eat yogurt and butter and dairy milk and all that stuff. I mean, there's also a lot of great replacement products, but, you know, I sometimes want to say, hey, Andy, you shouldn't be drinking that so-and-so or eating that so-and-so. And it's like, Jack, you keep your mouth shut, young man, you baby brother to your 63-year-old brother, 64-year-old brother, because he knew ahead of I did, you know. And when I finally converted and became aware of what I eat and how much it matters, then I went, you know, I got to find another expression. I'm a way to where I was going to say, then I went whole hog. Well, wait a sec. I like hogs. They're really smart, nice creatures. Why wouldn't I want to go whole hog? Oh, gosh. Yep. So I don't criticize anybody. I meet them where they are, and I realize that I'm, you know, I was a hypocrite for 50 years, so I can't criticize anybody ever. I just have to be patient and understanding and try to explain things gently and answer questions when people ask.
Right. That's what you got to be, you know, open-minded, and because awareness and being educated about it, that's the key. You know, if you turn your head, close your eyes and your ears and say, no, I don't want to listen to that, I'm going to still say the same. You know, educate yourself out there. Look how these slaughterhouses and everything, how these animals are being treated before they go to the shelf. It is disgusting. I can't even finish watching the videos, you know, and they don't deserve that. And then just the fear and anxiety, they're traumatized, okay?
Yeah.
And they have families just like we do, and they want to be around them and enjoy the pigs. Look at the pigs in those crates. They're so confined, they can't even move. And these are living animal beings. They deserve so much better. I mean, it's terrible. You know, how could they, you know, you look at them, and I've seen photos and videos, it's like, how could, this is animal cruelty front lines, you know, first degree. They can't even move around. They can't socialize. You know, it's terrible. We need a lot of changes in this world.
That famous quote that said, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, we would all be vegetarians? Here's a funny one. I know one of these three people said it. It was either Paul McCartney, Albert Schweitzer, or Gandhi. Paul McCartney?
But,
you know, one of those three dudes.
Sure.
They were brothers, right?
No.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's it. It's just sort of, you know, revealing the truth, and then people will say, oh, my God, I don't want to partake in that anymore. I mean, ultimately, we're all creatures of habit, we human beings, and it's difficult for many people a lot of the time to change behavior. But that comes when people are motivated to change, when they you know, not being yelled at, but they're being spoken to, you know, reasonably and compassionately, and they're willing to learn new truths that they didn't know, that are intentionally, as again Will Tuttle taught me years ago, are intentionally kept away from us as children. We're taught by our parents who didn't know better, and then, of course, the industries that make money on these practices also hide the truth. They have to. That's why we don't see the inside of slaughterhouses unless you want to know the truth, and then it's right there on YouTube for anybody to find. Yeah.
Right, exactly. They're not going to put it on TV. I've never seen it on TV. You know, I don't know if it's happening.
You know, it's funny
YouTube,
you say that.
Is.
I remember vividly. I was 13 or 14, but I remember where I was sitting. It was watching it on a black and white TV in the 70s in upstate New York by myself, and it was a documentary on PBS, which is the public station, Channel 13, out of New York City, and it was a documentary called Meat. And in black and white, I remember seeing my very first footage of a slaughterhouse, the kill floor. And I won't go into detail for this audience, that I'm sure they know of it, but it was just horribly brutal, and it traumatized me. I remember seeing that, and I didn't know what to do with what I had just seen as a young teenager. Like, no one else knew it. We were all meat eaters. Everyone around us was meat eaters. I didn't know any vegetarians at that age. And I didn't have community, to come back to that. I didn't have support. Obviously there were vegetarians in the world, but they weren't in New York that I knew of or that I was introduced to. So I did know about it, but then, as I've learned, you know, for an existing behavior to change, it can take repeated new information and effort. It's not just instantly. For some people it is. I have met people who became vegetarian when they learned the truth, and that was it. And I envy them for that kind of simple clarity. For me, it was a much longer journey, and I still... Behavior is so powerful. I can pass a burger joint and smell a cooked burger and go, wow, that smells good, because it's not associated with death and torture and killing. It's just a smell that I associate with taste. And that's the power of conditioning in our society. I know better, and I don't do any of that, of course, anymore, but I'm not one of those vegetarians whose stomach turns at the smell of meat. I envy those people because it's easier for them. There's no temptation at all about it.
Right, exactly. I know what you're talking about. You know,
yeah.
And if you look at it, you know, with the people, because I've noticed even through, you probably have too, through, you know, the social media sites, there's more vegan recipes coming through, restaurants, and this is a plus for everyone, you know.
Yeah.
So everyone, you know, educate yourself, you know what goes on behind the scenes. I've seen some of these horrific videos of cows being hit with pitchforks and just totally,
yep.
I mean, abused. And it's like, they don't, look how innocent they are. Why doing this?
Yeah. And what's so horrible about it is the people who work in that industry themselves have to toughen up and become abusers. In order to do their job, which is stand somewhere and just kill animal or kill animal, kill animal on an assembly line, is they have to harden their hearts, and then they become... After watching that kind of brutality and participating in it, they become hardened, and that's how they can do it. You know, like human beings have been, they learn how to train to kill each other in wars, you know, for arguably a necessary cause there, you know, depending on your feelings about war and which war. But that's how you can work assembly line. So it becomes abusive to the humans who work in it, as well as obviously horribly abusive and deadly to the animals that run through it. But it's simple. Here's the fix. Don't buy those products. There you go. On to the next. Simple fix for that one. Much easier than trying
that's
to stop
right.
an oil company from drilling somewhere. Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. That is so true, too. And I want to get on the subject about these elks.
Please. Thank you. I was thinking the same thing, too.
Yes.
The point raised. Yeah.
And
yeah.
You want to tell us what's going on out there with this. And it's so sad how they're getting treated. And if you want to bring up that gathering coming up on the 22nd, you know,
yes.
for them to
yes.
bring
so,
the water bucket.
Yeah, so we have another action planned on Saturday, October 22nd. But first, let me give just a quick outline. And then I'd also love to take calls from people once we do that, if
okay.
there are questions, because
yes.
it's a great way to go back and forth and engage the audience. But so Point Reyes, R-E-Y-E-S, Reyes, Point Reyes, National Seashore is in California, north of San Francisco, about 20 miles, and it's 80 to 90 coast miles of protected seashore off a National Marine Sanctuary, so a pristine place, and it was formed in, I'm blanking on the number right now, 1962, there it is, made into a national park. It was formerly ranch land, a lot of dairies, and also beef cattle operations were there. They sold the land to the national government, to the feds, for millions of dollars, which was paid out over several decades, because it was a lot of money, and they agreed they would leave in, generally speaking, about 25 years, or until the families running the ranch died. So they would age out, and they were paid, and that was the deal. That's how our park was created. And they fought it bitterly at first. Now, of course, with revisionist history, they say, oh, no, we were here, and we sacrificed to make... No, no, you were paid, you fought it, the political winds turned, and it became a national park, thank goodness. 71,000 acres of national seashore, technically a national park unit in the national park system, run by the National Park Service, which is in the Department of Interior out of Washington, D.C. However, they were supposed to be out of there in 1987, 25 years after 1962, but they reneged, the ranch families reneged on the deal. They lobbied politicians as that time was about to run out, and got a stay of execution, a, sure, you can stay another 5 years with another five-year lease extension, you poor ranchers, you know, who are struggling financially or whatever it is now, but they reneged on the deal, and they have lobbied for lease extensions ever since, for decades now, until 2022. Last year, they were just granted another 20-year lease extension, and that's when us activists just went bananas, because times have changed. You were never supposed to be here this long. They are the main source of pollution in the park from 5,000 cows, which poop on the land. And as I say, five cow pies may be compost for your garden, but 5 million pounds of manure and urine going onto a national park and washing into its waterways and ultimately the Pacific Ocean is the major source of pollution in this national park unit. And getting to the elk, the Tule elk were brought in 1987, reestablished. They were a native species, a subspecies of elk, native to California. There are only now about 5,500 of them in the entire world, all of them in California. They're not listed as threatened or endangered. That's another political fight. But there are only about 5,000 of them, a little bit more. Tule elk, which is about the same number of just cows at Point Reyes Seashore. And as a result of the cows still being in the park and taking 28,000 acres of land, a third of the entire park is given over to cattle operations, which are fenced off and closed to the public. The Tule elk have been put into these fenced areas adjacent to the cattle ranches because the cattlemen don't want the elk wandering into land that they are leasing back from the government now. They no longer own it. And as a result, the elk are suffering from being confined, and in one area called the Tule Elk Reserve, there are roughly three different herds, but the biggest one is in the Tule Elk Orwellian-named reserve. They don't have adequate food and water because of the California drought, which is making headlines now, hence our wildfires, too, which are making headlines. So in the last 2 years, over 450 elk have died because they don't have access to adequate food and water. And that is the tragic part. And the reason we're hopeful as a community of citizens and activists who want to make this a better situation for the elk and to finally remove the private cattle operations from the park is that it's such an easy argument for a neutral person to hear because it's a national park where everyone knows, well, wild animals should be free inside a national park. And why are there private businesses of any kind having an effect on the land? That seems wrong. Well, it is wrong. So that's the fight we're fighting. And one of the ways we do that is by bringing in water to the elk in the starving Tule Elk Reserve because they die from not having enough water and enough food as well. But we're bringing in water in, not this coming Saturday, but Saturday, October 22nd, so anybody who might hear this in the Bay Area can learn all about the elk and visit the elk. It's a free park, free to anybody. Free admission at all times, unlike, say, the bigger parks of Yosemite and Yellowstone, the famous parks in America. So that's what we're doing, and that's why we're doing it in a nutshell, and that's a big nutshell, and I'm happy to answer more questions to you, Debbie, or, of course, any callers in about it. And the two places to learn more about the Tule Elk, my own Tree Spirit website, which is treespiritproject.com, or as a consultant for Indefensive Animals who supports these actions and provides valuable resources so these actions are made possible and accessible to people to help the animals, to help the elk, and even to help cows, who are, of course, victims too. That's IDAUSA.org and then /elk if you're curious about that issue. But it's on the main site as well. So thank you for listening to all that. You've been very patient.
Oh, no, this is all important there, Jack, everything you're saying. And the more information you get out, the better, okay? Because I know, you know, everybody out there visit the Facebook page, you know, and if you want to go to that event, they got an event going on Facebook. You know, the time, like you said, is October 22nd. And, you know, go there and, you know, keep spreading the word if you're out there in California. Because they need us, you know, they need all of us, and to help them. And Jack, you got a caller, or yeah, okay.
Someone at the doorbell. Someone's at the front door. I just heard.
Somebody's at the door.
Great. I wonder who that could be. Maybe it's Santa.
That's a good one. Anyway, if anybody wants to call in and have any questions for Jack or comments, area code 310-982-4270, and you'll be in the queue. Press 1, and I'll bring you on board. Just try to refrain from any noises in the background, okay? TVs, radios, conversations, because Blog Talk Radio picks up everything. And if Mama Cat out there wants to call in, call in, Mama Cat. Meow. She's a big supporter of this show, part of the Voices Carry for Animals, you know, family. And but, you know, we got to do something here, everyone. And, you know, it takes teamwork and keep, you know, pressing that share button, or if you're on Twitter, retweet. I mean, when you once get to the newsfeed, other people pick it up, and the more the better, the stronger we become, you know, the information on this. Because that, you know, on the 22nd, on 2 o'clock, you know, California time, everyone, you know, make it there. Because, you know, let these elks know that we care, okay? And too bad I can't be here in Florida, but all the California residents, maybe you could show up. You know, and the more voices, they deserve their rights. And they're so adorable. I've seen pictures of Jack, and they are so adorable.
They are beautiful, you know, animals.
They're
like giant deer or little monster elk you see in other parts of the country. And they're, I mean, that's the incredible thing about Point Reyes. You can drive in for free. It's just 20 miles from San Francisco north. And you can see a herd of elk. It's harder to find, I guess, you know, there are bison in Yellowstone and bear at Yosemite and other places, but this is just guaranteed. You can view them from a parking lot, which is not the ideal way, but you can actually see them as you drive in. It's incredible. And they're very big, gentle animals, not predators on humans, so it's very safe, and you can walk out among them, which is what we'll be doing when we bring water to one of the last, it is the last remaining pond in the reserve that is not dried up because of the lack of water in California, and we're going to put several hundred gallons of water in it. As much for the publicity of saying we the community do not accept the situation, we want them to be released from their elk zoo, which is defined by cattle fences, and have elk leave their 2,600-acre compound, which sounds pretty big, but the park itself is 71,000 acres, most of which they are denied access to because cattle rule the roost, and the National Park Service policies favor the profits of private cattle operations inside a national park unit. That's what's so nuts about it, so upside down. You know, there's an argument to be made for cattle operations or defenders of private businesses. It's not part of this argument. This is a national park. The land is owned by the people, and yet the people are blocked from accessing a third of it because cattlemen are a very powerful lobby, and they've lobbied the federal government, our politicians, who listen to the will of the people if we speak in large enough numbers, to change the policy, remove the cattle from a public park, and free the elk to be wild animals as they're supposed to be inside a national park,
right,
as everyone knows. Right.
Yes, agreed all the way. And they deserve it. You know, they're not just so much to roam and feel, you know, just confined in certain areas.
Yep.
So everyone, please spread the word about this. Jack is also on Twitter, okay? So wherever you can join in, please spread the word. The 22nd is coming right up the sidelines, and I think that would be awesome to be there, you know, seeing them, and because they're beautiful, and they,
yeah.
you know,
I tell people, you know, bring
and,
a sandwich and the family and
wow.
have a day in the park. You can be part of the action for the elk and then spend the rest of the day and enjoy them. Spend an entire day if you're coming, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's quite accessible. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll
have
you.
And again, for more information, my treespiritproject.com has elk on the front page, and idausa.org/elk. And at this point, we've been getting a lot. There's a large growing community of citizens who care. So you can just Google Thule, T-U-L-E. It's pronounced Thule, T-U-L-E elk. Point Reyes, R-E-Y-E-S, and you'll see lots of articles, and my name will inevitably come up with that crazy last name of mine, Gescheit, with a G. Yeah, so anyway, it's all Googleable now, for sure, because we've been in the news a lot on CBS TV and ABC TV and newspapers for this
better,
issue.
This is even better yet, yes.
Yeah, yeah. We've been making headway. There's people... There have also been two lawsuits brought against the National Park Service for their treatment of the elk. One of them I'm a plaintiff in, brought by the Harvard Animal Law and Policy Center, Gescheit versus Halland, which is Deb Halland, the Secretary of the Interior, Department of Interior, and the other one is by three different environmental groups who have sued for more environmental reasons, all caused by cattle operations fouling a national park, which goes against their charter to care for its natural resources, not to foul them with lots of cow manure and cow pee, which is what's happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and you know what? Somebody's at the door, Jack.
Okay, let him in.
Hey, knock, knock, who's there? Okay, Erico 719, you're live and on the air. Is this the mama cat? Meow.
That would be me.
She's a former guest, Jack. She was on here. She's awesome. She's one of the family members of Voices Care for Animals. She's awesome. She takes care of 110 cats and colonies. And that's why I call her Mama Cat, because they love
wow.
her. Wow, you know,
indeed.
They give her a standing ovation when she comes near them. Okay, go ahead, Bobby. Hey,
I just want to say this. I've never heard about this issue before. About 2 weeks ago, I came across something about it. And, oh, my gosh, it just, my blood was boiling. I'm so tired of these politicians picking cows and cattle over our natural wildlife and decimate. What happens to those elk if there's a fire in their area? With them being fenced into a small area, which where, you know, most people would say that's a large area, but for that many elk, it really isn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what
would happen
in
a fire? Well, it's interesting you say that. Last year there was a fire in the park. It wasn't near one of the herds, one of the three different areas where herds are, but there actually was a fire and wildfire smoke. It was, you know, a lot of wildfires were going on last year and the year before, as will happen now regularly. That hasn't been interesting. Because it's a seaside area, they generally could run, in some of the cases, away from forested areas, and they don't tend to live in forested areas. So of all the dangers they face, and California is certainly threatened by wildfires, for the most part, the elk are not in the biggest danger from wildfire. It's from being confined without food and water. And then the other
right.
part I didn't go into because it's going to make you crazy. They actually, part of their new 20-year lease arrangement in what they call the general management plan, it sounds so nice and bureaucratic, they're actually allowed to shoot elk. The Park Service is legally allowed now to shoot elk in two of the three herds. When their numbers rise above a certain arbitrary number, that their biologist claims is, well, that's the carrying capacity for that natural area, despite none of the areas being natural because they're fenced. They've created little elk zoos, and they pick a number to say this is how many animals should be in the zoo. If the number rises above, they can shoot them. So that's far more danger to the animals than wildfire. Crazy, right?
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
And it brings me back to what they're doing with the horses. The same, you know, basically same thing. We pick some number that we decide is the number of how many wild horses should be allowed to live and how many shouldn't. And it's just, is it ever going to end? I mean, it's politics over wildlife, and it just drives me nuts.
And I would say,
what can the general, oh, my dogs are going crazy. What can the general
that's a very, very masculine cat you have barking in the back.
Oh, my goodness.
Sounds just like a dog to me. It's incredible.
That's my cat, Ahula. It's a cat. It's a cat, Ahula.
That's a cross between a Siamese and a German Shepherd. I thank you for the observation, Mama Cat, because as I keep telling people, this is not just about the tule elk, who are certainly worth protecting on their own, but this is really about the cattle industry. And as you guys know, then, as you're mentioning, not to mention the outfit of the Department of the federal government called Wildlife Services, whose job is merely to kill wild animals for the cattle industry, I consider it ultimately not just politics, but economics, because the industry can pay politicians, give them money for their campaigns, the usual games, which is why in the old days, when I was a kid, both Republicans and Democrats advocated for campaign finance reform. So wealthy people can't, or wealthy corporations can't buy politicians. That's the problem, ultimately, and that involves politics, but it's just about money. But the other way the average person can do something, rather than just get pissed off at Washington, which, you know, I understand it, but it's not, as I say, actionable. The strategy is tell people to stop eating these products, and that hurts the industry. That's one of the other ways to get at them, of course, is to take away their business, which is now happening. Vegan is a word that didn't used to exist 10 years ago, let alone 30 years ago, and there's all these replacement products which are not requiring using huge amounts of America's land, millions of acres, to raise cattle. One of the most inefficient ways to raise food imaginable, not to mention cruel, not to mention killing the climate.
Yeah, I don't think people have joined together all of those issues yet.
I get it, and you know, I don't know you guys well enough to know where you are on it, but I appreciate the forum, and I'm thrilled to have anybody come on and say, well, I don't agree with you there, and we'll talk about it. I welcome discourse.
Right.
It's a great thing. It's how people learn and grow, and certainly including me. I've got tons more to learn.
Yeah, I don't think that a lot of people have completely connected all those dots to the meat industry and the damage and, you know, and then with all the egg bills that they've passed, the gag orders on agriculture and, you know, all that crap. People just don't know. And when you share stuff like that, for example, on Facebook, they tag you and they rip it down. You know, it's going against their policies. Well, that's because they're in bed with the meat industry. So, of course, you know.
It's one of the, you're absolutely right. And it's one of the reasons I actually am so involved in the Point Reyes advocacy, because you know, people think it's just about, oh, those poor elk, why would they treat them so terribly? And the answer, you know, once you get into it, as I was going on about it, it goes back to the cattle industry. But that's not the entry point to that conversation, because when you say, don't eat cattle, like, if people aren't already aware of it, they're like, what are you talking about? What does that have to do with anything? So this is a way, when you go to Point Reyes issue and say, don't shoot the elk and free them, then you get into, well, why can't they?
Right.
Why can't you leave the elk out to mix with the cattle? Are they conflict? No, there's not a conflict, other than the businesses don't want any elk eating any of, quote unquote, their grass. They don't own it, but they consider it their grass, even though cows outnumber elk at Point Reyes Seashore 10 to 1. There are only 500 elk put into this small area, while 5,000 cows basically had the run of the place because they're a for-profit commodity, right?
And the cattle do far more damage to the land than do the elk.
They do indeed, because they weigh more and they eat more, because they're raised to be as big as possible for profit, whether it's to be eaten or drink their milk. Exactly. They're not, and they're actually an imported species, you know, brought from Europe where my ancestors came from, and they're very heavy on the land. People sort of, well, there used to be a lot of bison here, and that sounds good to begin with until you get into the facts of it, which is the bison roamed, and that was before, you know, 340 million Americans came over from all over the world to be in America and create this wonderful melting pot of people. Yeah. Yeah, we just don't, the other thing too is, the other simple way to say it is, even if you don't want to give up meat and milk, you can eat a heck of a lot less. It's a luxury product that you don't need a lot of. You don't need any of it, really. But for someone who says, I'm not going to give it up, I'm 75 years old and I don't care, it's like, you can eat less. Your doctor would probably tell you the same thing. You could start there.
Right. You know, and like me, I was raised on a farm, a cattle farm. And, you know, I was never, back in those days, I'm sure the abuse and all that still happened, but we had a happy farm.
Yep.
And I never saw all that. Oh, there goes my dog. Spooky dog. If the
That's
grass
that
is growing, they're barking.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of people of our generation who grew up on farms, and I agree with you. I mean, it ends badly for the animals, but they weren't treated as horrifically as they are now, and that's because you have to produce enough meat or milk to feed tens of millions of people or hundreds of millions of people, and then we export it as well for profit. As soon as it becomes for profit and you have to maximize profits and profit margins are shrinking, hence the consolidation of the beef industry, the cattle industry, then you're going to have much more mechanization and therefore much more abuse. It's different than having a family farm with 5 or 20 cows. I mean, I wouldn't be an advocate for that, but that was a different business model completely, to be sure. And that's hence the destruction of family farms and the consolidation of the industry into these giant corporations that really are going to treat the animals terribly, because it's all about profit and not about any kind of relationship with the animal anymore.
Right. Now, I was raised in Wisconsin, and I live in Colorado now, so there's a big difference there. But when I was growing up, you know, we had 20 cattle, and we raised them for the community, basically. People in the community, you know, that they would pay for a cow or whatever, and we raised them on the farm. They came and picked them up, and, you know, as kids, we thought that was a happy cow thing. You know, we raised them, they came and got them, but the slaughter part of it never really, like, stuck into my head because we never saw that part. You know,
yeah.
But now I go back home, and like you say, all these small-time farmers that did just that to survive have been shut down by these conglomerates and their mega farms, and there's thousands and thousands of cows, and they take the babies away from the mothers, and it's just, it's horrendous, and they would rather have that than natural elk on land. And that's what I just don't get, why we can't all, basically, why can't we all get along, you know, have them in the same, it drives me nuts. And it's another animal every day. Every time I look, there's another animal that they're going after, and it's just ridiculous.
Well, you know, you raise an interesting question, too, because here in California, with a lot of well-to-do white people, and please, don't get me wrong, some of my favorite people are white people. But they're going to have, they'll have this grass-fed beef, organic dairy, these wonderful terms for this, even if it's only 1% of the market, which is about what it is of these, you know, designer products.
Right.
Like, well, I can go to, you know, I can eat that good stuff. And they don't realize that those actually take up more land and use more resources, and in California's case, use more of the precious dwindling water that California's experiencing. So even really educated, so-called self-described environmentalists will say, well, I only eat Strauss dairy or only eat Neiman Ranch beef, and not realizing that those products, even though the famous chef Alice Waters might use them, don't realize they're actually more harmful to the environment. And yes, they're
right.
less cruel than a monster factory, but it still doesn't end rather well for those animals. And of course, as you were
right.
saying, you got to take the calf away from the mom. You got to separate the baby from the mommy, and because you want to take all of her milk. You don't share it, maybe as you did on your family farm in Wisconsin with only 20 cows, where the calf
right.
is allowed to stay there. Yeah.
Everywhere.
So that's all an illusion,
yeah,
and the industry is
that.
Very skillful at saying that that's, oh, it's a good alternative. And then people say, well, I eat that stuff, as if they actually do all the time. It's actually worse.
I want to ask you, have you ever heard of the Western Governors Association?
I have not.
You should look them up.
Okay.
They really,
tell me.
They really push for cattle and more land and clearing the land of prairie dogs and deer and elk and horses and burros, and they're really big supporters of pushing the wildlife off the national land, government owned land.
Yep.
To rent it to like the farmers, just like you're saying, then the ranchers for cattle. And
they don't
seem to care. Now, they named the wild horse invasive species.
Yep.
Just recently, within the last couple years or so. And just like with the cats, once they added the cat to the invasive species,
yep.
all the laws started changing. The
yep.
protection for the cats disappeared. And now, as you can see, the protections for the horses and mules are disappearing. And I'm sure they're going to work right down to the elk as well.
I wrote down the name and I'll check it out. It reminds me of, you know, environmentalists for a time tried to get animals listed as endangered or threatened to save them. Well, on the opposite end of the spectrum is the Death Star, the cattle industry, labeling things invasive, which then gives them excuse to kill them all, as if cattle
right.
aren't an exotic, imported, or if you wish, invasive species that actually are the locust of the land right now. And it's all, if people want to read an incredible book about all this, it's called This Land, How Cowboys, Capitalism, and Corruption Are Ruining the American West. And the author is Christopher Ketchum, K-E-T-C-H-A-M, This Land, Christopher Ketchum. And it goes into excruciating detail about the effect of the cattle industry and just what you were talking about, taking over BLM lands and federal lands,
yep.
public lands, and doing giveaways to cattlemen to run their cattle for, you know, pennies on the dollar, screwing the American people financially, subsidizing the industry, and, of course, completely unknown to the average person. And this gets into politics and, of course, economics. But, again, I come off with a hopeful
right.
message, other than educating yourself, don't eat those products, and it undercuts the industry.
Yep, and that's Jack and Mama Cat. We're down to 2 minutes and 30 seconds. It's been another great show. Mama Cat, thank you for your support. I love it. And Jack, another great, you were great also. And looking forward to having you come back on, okay, sometime.
Absolutely. Thank
and
you so much.
Keep it
thank
up.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mama's Cat and Bear.
Yeah, my
thank you for everything you do, hon.
Yes.
Great.
And
again, if I may, just a last plug for my treespiritproject.com and for IDA USA.org/elk. That's In Defense of Animals. And my Tree Spirit Project are two organizations among many now that are involved to help the elk and raise awareness about cattle and how people can, you know, build community and make this a better planet for us and for the animals and to live in more peace and harmony, as you were saying at the very beginning of the show. Thank you.
Yes, peace and harmony. We'll welcome you back. I'll be in touch with you. Please keep me informed. I'm going to keep sharing it about that elk water, Bucket Brigade on the 22nd there, Jack. I hope
yes,
it goes well. I'll keep sharing it, okay?
You're the professional, yes. Remember
on
to promote the event that's coming up in two Saturdays, Saturday, October 22nd in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yep.
So check out those websites aforementioned.
I'll be sharing Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook, okay? But everyone, I want to thank you all for tuning in this evening. And next week, we want to welcome aboard his first time, Stacy Lee Sherwood. And we'll be discussing about the sea turtles. That'll be a first time, because they all need our help from some angle out there. You know, they need our attention. So I hope you join in 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Mountain, 4 o'clock Pacific. Listen in worldwide, and all shows are recorded live and archived on Blog Talk Radio. And thank you again, Jack. Another great show. Thank
My
you,
pleasure.
Everyone.
And everyone,
evening.
Tune in to Stacey. She's great. Stacey is how I met you, Debbie. So thank
yeah,
you again to Stacey Lee Sherwood. Wonderful.
I meant to say something. You should call in and surprise her.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I'll send her the show if she's not listening in right now.
Yeah. Okay. But thank you, everyone. Paul and
Ann,
united we stand against all animal cruelty and neglect across the land. That's right, Paul and Ann. Good night, everyone. May God bless you all. Bye-bye.
Hey, who's there?